This is HPR episode 2240 entitled Amateur Radio Roundtable. It is hosted by various hosts and is about 54 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is HPR community hams get together to talk about ham radio.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Hacker Public Radio. This is the amateur radio roundtable that was discussed on the mailing list, and we're just going to go through the Rumble channel here and introduce ourselves. I'm Christopher Hobbs. Done a couple of episodes here on Hacker Public Radio. My call sign is KD5RYO. I'm a technician class amateur radio operator here in the United States.
Hello, everybody. I'm John. My amateur radio call sign is Kilo Tango 4 Kilo Bravo. I'm a U.S. advanced call sign, a rare breed. There's not a lot of us left. I currently have only participated in the New Year's Eve community news. I've never done a episode on my own, but I'm a 20-plus year amateur radio operator, and it's one of my favorite hobbies.
All right. Well, my name is Steve. Call sign is KD0IJP, and I live in South Central Kansas in the United States. I'm currently a general class licensed amateur. Been licensed for, I think, 5 or 6 years now. And I've done a couple other Hacker Public Radio episodes in the last year or so. So that's me.
Yeah, and that's me. That's Michael, Delta Lima 4, Mike Golf Mike, doing the European part here. I'm licensed since a little bit over 25 years now. I live in southern Germany, and let's see what this roundtable gets us to.
I'm Tyrell Dennison, call sign KG5RHT, about as fresh as they get. I got my ticket over the weekend, participated in my first net just earlier tonight, and now I sit here excited to ask you guys all kinds of fun questions and learn more about the hobby that I've just joined.
That will be excellent. And congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, congratulations to your new license. It's great to have new blood here.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations. And I wish we had more of a European contingency because there were a lot of questions about the rules. And I guess I should mention, too, that I've been licensed since about 2003 with a couple-year break. But I've got my original call sign back. Speaking of the questions from the list, I only was able to come up with two questions. The first big question that spawned a lot of discussion was from Klaatu, which is, how do I get started? And then that yielded all of the discussion about, you know, what do you want to do, different license classes, what it's like in different countries. So I figured we could discuss that. And then the second most popular question, I guess the only other question, was from Tech Libre, which was, why do I need a license, and what happens if I operate without one? So why don't we start with Klaatu's question, and then we can move into the others. I'm interested to hear what you guys think is the best way to get rolling with everything. My advice was to, number one, decide what you want to do, and then number two, find a club to operate with, or not operate with, but to learn from. but that just opened a giant can of worms. So I guess from both US-centric and European-centric perspectives, what do you guys think the best way to obtain one's ticket is, the easiest path to that?
Are we talking about how to get the ticket or how to get your first setup once you have it?
How to get the ticket. This is somebody who has never known anything about the hobby at all. I mean, was the reason why we started this roundtable to begin with.
Yeah, just to answer questions, I was not able, I felt not up to doing it alone, and I needed reinforcement.
I guess I can probably speak. This is one thing that I'll actually have some authority in, having just taken my test less than a month ago. As far as resources, there's all kinds of materials. There's books, field book, no nonsense station class test prep. Listen to that nonstop for about a month, driving my family crazy. They didn't get radio time when they were in the car with me. It was all about prepping for my test. And I read through the ARRL prep book, listened to the audio book, that for about a month, and started taking tests. They have apps or places online, ARRL website, allow you to take practice tests, and got very quickly to the point where I could complete those after having listened to the book once and been actively reading. Was testing and passing quite frequently, well, regularly. Once I started passing, I didn't stop, fortunately. I say all that with the caveat of saying, coming into amateur radio, I already had experience with sound equipment, having worked as an audio engineer in live audio. I was a bit of a musician for a while. I also worked for a radio station, so that helped. While I was there, I got my wings with a soldering iron and electrical components, putting tables together, replacing blown capacitors and old radio equipment. And so I had some experience coming into it that probably gave me more of an edge when it came to getting comfortable quickly and passing those tests quickly. But if you're a hobbyist at all that's done anything with electrical work or sound equipment or anything like that, you should take to it pretty simple, especially if you'll put in the time to read, take the practice tests. And I really can't stress enough how valuable having that audiobook was for me. Just being able to, while I was driving, I'm also a bit of a runner, so while I was out running, I was just listening to that and getting all of the stuff that you just really have to have memorized and ready to pull out in that test situation into my head so that I was good to go. And passed the first time, January 2nd, and the FCC granted me my license a week ago tomorrow, so last Friday.
I can hear Ken asking, what's the ARL?
Oh, sorry. That would be... Has anybody got that off the top of head?
It's the Amateur Radio Relay League.
That's the one.
That's the United States organization that centers on amateur radio in the United States. What I was going to add is, if you're in the United States, if you go to www.arrl.org, and off the home page, there's a button that talks about licensing, education, and training, and how to get your license, a listing of clubs in your general area. In other countries, the best thing is to, do your DuckDuckGo or Google search for amateur or ham radio and your country, and you will probably within one or two clicks be on a similar page for the country that you're in.
Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty good advice there from both of you. I was just going to break it down just a slight bit and just simply say that at least in the United States, if you want to become an amateur radio operator, all you really have to do is pass the test and make an application to the FCC. That's the mechanics of it. And so the way you go about doing that is you find a testing session. And as John said, you know, you can go to the ARRL website or other websites and do a search on where a testing session is going to be in your area. And because all of the testing is done by volunteer examiners, and so you'll find them all over. And then you just go there, you take the test, you fill out the application, they send it into the FCC for you, and then a few weeks later you get your call sign. And that's really all there is to actually going about getting the license. Mm-hmm. What you do with it then afterwards, of course, is the next step.
That's an excellent addition, and I'm glad you guys mentioned the ARRL. When I first received my license back in 2003, I had hams around me, so they kind of coaxed me into it. And when I let my license lapse and went back to get another license, I had trouble figuring out if there was any activity in the area, and the ARRL website was how I found the local club where the volunteer exam coordinator was and where I got my technician exam scheduled and where I tested. And that brings up another point, that in the United States there are three levels of licensing at the moment. There are other levels that you cannot get any longer, with our advanced friend John here, but there is at the moment the technician class, general class, and extra class licenses. Each come with different privileges, and I think it's probably fair to say that most hams start, in at least in the U.S., with the technician class privileges. I'm not sure what the different classes are around the world, though.
Yeah, here in Germany, we also have entry-level classes, which are a little bit easier to obtain. And then you learn and update your license to have full access to all the bands allowed.
One other thing I was going to mention, one of you mentioned that you let your license lapse. I did that too, actually. And the way that works in the U.S. anyways, at least the way it is now, is once you are licensed, that license is good for 10 years. And after 10 years, you have to renew it. And there's nothing you have to do, no test you have to take. You just have to say, I want to renew it. But if you don't do that, then you get a 2-year grace period. And if you don't do anything within those 2 years, then your license is expired. And if you want a license again, then you have to start over. And I actually went through that process as well a number of years ago.
Yeah, and an important point to raise with that too is we have these call signs, and these call signs are not us, they are our station identifiers. When your license expires and is lapsed, you no longer have your call sign, so then you'll have to do like I did and file for a vanity call sign to get your old call sign back. So my call sign when I first tested was Kilo Delta 5 Romeo Yankee Oscar, which is what I have now. When it finally expired, they assigned me Kilo Golf 5 Quebec Delta Quebec. Didn't care for that and filed for a vanity call, and within about a month I had my old call sign back. It was available. Nobody else had taken it. So that's another point to bring up, I guess, is if you do get your license and you don't like your call sign, at least in the United States, you can file for almost anything you want.
Yeah, similar here. You can get a special call sign or something you like, but once you have it and you're normally... Until you upgrade, you keep it.
Yeah, I think that's the difference. At least currently in the U.S., you can... I don't know if there's any minimum time that you have to keep a license. I think you can keep applying for vanity call signs until you get the one that you really like. At least I know some people that have changed call signs 2 or 3 times in a 2 or 3 month period, which I don't quite understand, but nonetheless, it is possible.
Yes, don't get me started on that.
Yeah, it's hard to keep up with people sometimes. We get so accustomed to these stations being the actual people, and And you know, that's another good point to mention. If you are not licensed, again, speaking from the United States-centric viewpoint here, if you can find an amateur radio event in your area, and probably the best one for a lot of people is if you can find a field day event, you can operate under somebody else's call as long as they're present there with you at the radio. So if you manage to find a club and you're not sure if you want to get your license, you could reach out and contact that club, and they're often very supportive of people looking to get into the hobby, and you may be able to join them at one of their events and get some time in on the air before ever acquiring your license.
Yeah, things have been relaxed a little bit on our side. There are at least greeting messages allowed from non-licensed people to say at least hello. And there are educational call signs. So someone can apply for an educational call sign that's... I'm missing the prefix right now. And those are intended for people who are preparing for a test, and they can use this call sign in the presence of the call sign holder to do radio contacts as a sort of learning experience.
Well, since we're talking about how you go about getting your license, one of the things I was going to mention is, as just as a piece of advice for somebody out there considering it, you know, the hobby of amateur radio is huge. There's many, many different things you can do, and it can get overwhelming. And so one of the pieces of advice that I give to people is don't try to figure it all out before you go get your license. You'll probably never do it. So, you know, once you decide, yeah, I think I want to try, you know, become an amateur radio operator, study for your test, go find a testing location, take your test, get your license, and then, you know, find other people that can help you figure out what it is you want to do. Don't try to figure it all out ahead of time, or you'll never do it.
I think that's great advice. I yammered off a huge list in the thread on the mailing list of things you can do, and it occurred to me as I was going through some of the testing material that you'll learn about various things that you can do through that. And you made a good point, too, about finding someone to help you. In the hobby, we generally call that an Elmer, right? I never really had an Elmer, and they're kind of hard to find in my region, but this concept of sort of a mentor guiding you through the hobby and helping you find what you want to do. The other thing that can really help with that is if you do find a club, you know, and usually if you find your volunteer exam coordinator, you will find a club. A lot of clubs are typically focused on a particular activity. You know, here we have a UHF society, and we have there's a couple of groups that do emergency communications, and at one point there was a group that was doing DXing, which is making long distance contacts. If you find one of those groups, you may find that you enjoy what they're doing, and then you can get your advice from them and figure out what to do from there, which also goes into the question that was asked, you know, how do you pick your equipment? I think you kind of pick your equipment based on the direction you've chosen in the hobby as well. So, yeah, it is a vast, vast hobby, a lot of things to get into.
Yeah, I think amateur radio is the most diverse hobby you can ever choose, because there's so many aspects, and they are all under the umbrella of amateur radio. So if you take people playing with microcontrollers, playing with quadcopters or whatever, you can find those things all under the umbrella of amateur radio in an amateur radio context. And I think getting in touch with the club, and also for a first station setup, whatever brings you in contact with the locals is a good choice for starting radio equipment. If you are in a densely populated area where you have repeater stations on VHF, UHF frequencies, you can reach with a handy talkie, then this would be a great station to start, to get you just in contact with the local people, and then find out what they do, what interests you. And if you are in a widespread country, it might be shortwave on some frequency to get in touch with those people. But I think whatever gets you in touch with the locals is a good starting point.
Well, to add a little bit to what Chris said there about getting involved with the club, one of the hardest things, at least for me, I think this is a personality thing, but at least for me, when I first got my license, I got a radio, and I was kind of scared to talk at the radio. I didn't know what to do and anything like that. And so one of the things that you'll find is in a lot of areas there's like organized nets. In fact, I think Tyrell may have said something about the fact that he checked into his first net. And that's basically just an organized get-together over the air where usually somebody kind of leads the net and people can check in and talk and everything. And it just helps you relax a little bit, and you can listen to what other people are doing, and then you can kind of follow suit and go that way. Another thing, the local club that I'm a member of here in South Central Kansas, we do a lot of communications for things like bike rides for, raising money for some things. And so then we do communications for that. And again, that's an organized, event where you can really learn a lot about operating by watching what other people are doing and then following suit.
Yeah, club stations are a great way to get into operation. I remember my first Morse code contact after I got my license to do Morse code, and I was basically keying in on the transmitter side what the other guy wrote on the sheet of paper, because I was far too nervous to do it on my own. At least the first contact. The second one was my own, and so I got with a holding hand and got into it.
Well, there is a lot of protocol on the radio, and I think the word that was said over and over that makes the most sense is listen. When you do finally get your radio and you're trying to participate in one of the many activities, always listen for a while before you jump in. Listen to a net or listen to a conversation or something of that nature. And Michael, if it makes you feel any better, I've been doing both satellite and CW for years, and I still write down everything. I write scripts down constantly, so there's just often a lot to remember, so I can't always keep it in my head. And I still get a little mic shy. That's another good thing to bring up. Sometimes it's a little you might get a little nervous, it's a little scary talking on the radio, but everybody is so friendly, and if you commit a faux pas or something like that, people rarely ever berate you. And if they do, you can just turn the VFO knob and move on to another place. People are always willing to help, it seems.
What's CW? What's a VFO?
Well, that's a good point. So CW, I believe, is abbreviation for carrier wave, but we're talking about Morse code here, International Morse. And then VFO is a variable frequency oscillator. It is the knob you use to change the frequency you are currently listening to or transmitting on, or both, depending on your radio setup.
Yeah, I think VFO is just the mode of most modern radio equipment where you can continuously, in some increments, change the frequency, as opposed to memory mode where you normally have stored fixed channels. And CW, I think it's continuous wave, and I was always wondering, why is it continuous wave if you key it? It's turned on and off. Does anybody know for sure why it's called continuous wave?
It's a continuous carrier. When it's on, it does not oscillate. It is not modulated.
Yeah, I think that's the issue. You're not modulating the carrier. You're just turning the carrier on and off.
Yeah, I think it comes from the very, very old days as a contrast to Spark, which was not so continuous, the wave, because you have the Spark triggering the oscillation, and then it tapers down until the next spark reignites it. So I think the continuous wave is continuous while keyed down, and not so variable as a spark generated signal.
We should probably talk a little bit. We mentioned CW, and that's just a name that we use for Morse code. It used to be, in the United States at least, when you got your very basic level ham radio license, you had to know Morse code. You had to pass a Morse code test, 5 words per minute, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I had to do that the first time I got a license. That's no longer the case. And you can get into a lot of arguments as to whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it used to be that people were maybe a little bit frightened of getting a ham license because they had to learn Morse code. That's not the case here anymore. I'm curious, over in Germany, do you have to learn Morse at all?
No longer. So when I started, there was a basic VHF-UHF license starting at 2 meters, which is 144 megahertz in the higher frequencies, which did not require Morse code. And if you wanted to go on shortwave frequencies below 30 megahertz, you needed Morse code in two speeds. One was 30 letters per minute, which would be about 5 words per minute. And the full license, which allowed access to all frequencies and the higher output power, was 10 words per minute. But it has been dropped since then.
Well, we just
that brings up why I have that brings up why I am still have the advanced license. I'm an old guy, and when people look me up on a website called QRZ.com. They see it's an advanced call sign. It means I'm a dinosaur, but it also means that I passed 13 words a minute all those years ago. I actually never did pass 20. I tried a couple times, but I was having too much fun on the air with the privileges I had. But the funny thing is, hated learning Morse code, and once I started doing it, I actually have always enjoyed it. It took a while, but once I got it, I enjoyed it. Now, I don't use much of it. I use what we call digital modes. I like to use my computer to do my talking.
So, since we're bringing up more acronyms here, just let me say that VHF is very high frequency, UHF is ultra high frequency, and those are pretty common for short-range communication. I'm just going to be as simple as possible with it. And then we also will probably talk a little bit and have talked a little bit about high frequency, shortwave being included in that, and that usually goes a little bit further. Also, I guess since we're jumping into different modes of operations, why don't we talk a little bit about what each one of us do? Because we have a pretty vast experience set here, it seems. So why don't we talk a little bit about the modes of operation that we like to use and just kind of go down the list. So for me, I'm interested in CW. I got my license after the CW requirement was lifted because it was a deterrent for me. But like a lot of others, I'm finding Morse code as a enjoyable aspect of the hobby. So I like to do QRP or low power Morse code. I also like to work satellites. I like to bounce my radio signals off satellites and talk to other people. And I tend to do just terrestrial repeater type things. So why don't we move down the list and see what everybody enjoys doing?
All righty. Well, I'll jump in. I have done everything from bounce signals off of satellites, off of meteorites, and I do most of what we call work on the digital modes, where you're using a computer to generate tones and put them out over the airwaves to communicate with low power. Currently have worked over 100 different countries on almost every band that amateur radio has privileges in, except for, well, from 80 meters all the way, which is they call it, well, I should have wrote everything down, but I am have always been mic shy from the time I started in the hobby, and I do much better using something other than my voice to communicate. But I could go probably for hours on the fun stuff that I've done and the people I've communicated with, from astronauts to you name it. I'm a very much a big advocate of just sticking your feet in the water and trying a little bit of everything, and there's a lot to try.
Well, that's a good summary there. As far as myself, I have not learned CW or Morse code, so I haven't done any of that work, although it's on my list of things I'd like to do someday. Most of the work that I do is local repeater type stuff, which this would be what Chris was saying, the UHF and VHF frequencies, where there's a repeater that's local or not too far away, and so when I talk, the repeater hears me and then repeats what I've said to anybody listening, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's a way that a lot of local communication is done, and so I do quite a bit on that with nets and things like that. And then I've also done a fair amount of HF work, which is the high frequency, mostly in the 20 meter band, some in the 40 meter band, and that's where you can talk, you know, hundreds or thousands of miles away. And I've talked to most of the states in the U.S. and a few European countries as well.
Yeah, okay. So I would not have learned Morse code if I wouldn't have had to, but I like it. I'm not particularly good at it, but when I am doing contact on the shortwave bands, which is embarrassingly rare, then I try to do it in Morse code. And these are normally some field day activities during several events in the year, but not really much from home. And the most active part right now is amateur radio direction finding, where I take part in local competitions quite frequently. I do normal local repeater stuff, talking on the local frequencies directly to club members and so on. And that's basically it.
So I, like I mentioned, I've just gotten on the radio yet, other than that's what we call phone, which is just talking into my radio and listen to other people that way, as opposed to working with CW and Morse code or doing stuff with digital. I'm excited to do both. Like Chris mentioned, got interested in amateur radio years ago when there was that required test for CW, and just was intimidated by having to take a test on Morse code, so I never got it. And when it came back around to be of interest to me this time, that with that being lifted, I was much happier to go take that test and pass it. And then I'm actually interested in doing things like Morse code now. I'm just barely in the process of starting to learn my Morse code alphabet so I can do CW and send that further. And then digital stuff as well. John, I'm excited to some of the stuff that you've been able to do doing the digital nodes, because I've just begun to kind of understand what's possible with that. Another interesting thing that I've heard about would be, they call them fox hunts, where they'll take a transmitter, and I don't know that any of the clubs around here do this. If not, I'd love to be someone to help initiate that. Take a transmitter and hide it in the region, and everybody tries to track down that transmitter by listening and heading in that direction, and basically kind of like anyone is familiar with geocaching, you like geocaching, but instead of using GPS coordinates, you're using your highly directional radio to locate the device. Things like that sound really fun. I've also got two young boys, sons and a daughter, that I'm really glad to get involved in the hobby and of introducing them to things like this, so that they, at a young age, those are kind of where my interests lie, or my interests than the experience at this point. But that's where I want to go with the hobby.
Yeah, fox hunt. That is the official term is radio amateur radio direction finding, ARDF.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm doing with normally five transmitters hidden in the forest, transmitting in a sort of round robin fashion, and you have your receiver, and it's very, very nice for non-licensed people, because all you need is to take a receiver, borrow one, and be instructed how to use it, and then you can go off and find those transmitters and have fun.
Yeah, that sounds like a blast to me. I'm personally one that enjoys being out in the woods, so any excuse to good one for me. So excited to find if there are any clubs that do those, and if not, maybe be someone who gets that started.
I think it's excellent that you mentioned that it's something that non-amateurs or non-licensed folks can get into. And direction finding is certainly an excellent thing for that, because you can do it with a receiver. So I think that brings up another good point too. It is possible to listen to amateur radio operators talk if you're interested. Michael has mentioned a couple of times here shortwave. With a simple shortwave receiver. Now the what's the word I'm looking for? The receive filter maybe the bandwidth of the receiver makes it difficult to, there's not a very narrow filter in it, so it makes it difficult to hear Morse code. And Morse code isn't, we've talked about that a lot, it's not a huge part of the hobby, but it is just one of these many aspects. But you can often tune around a shortwave receiver on these different high frequency bands and listen to amateurs talking if your receiver has capability of doing sideband, single sideband. You can also just get a scanner that's capable of VHF, UHF, and you can often pick up local repeaters and things like that. And there's usually, the ARRL has band charts that tell you what frequencies are available to listen to, and sites like Repeater Book and ArtSciPub and your local club sites will have lists of repeaters. And the ARRL will have like the national calling frequencies and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of space for people to tune around and listen before they ever get their license if they want to hear what hams are up to.
On the thought of the shortwave receivers, many of them that are in that don't cost a whole lot, $30 to $40 US, will have a setting for single sideband or SSB. If they don't, another thing to look for is something called beat frequency oscillator, BFO, which will also allow you to listen to single sideband transmissions and CW a little bit easier. Way back when, before I was licensed, I had a shortwave radio that had a BFO, and it opened up a whole whole new avenue of listening, and it kept the interest and up, and because if you hear it without it, it just sounds like Donald Duck talking, and with it, you're able to pull out voices and hear some of the fun stuff that people are talking about.
So the first receiver I had was a direct conversion receiver that was given by my uncle, which was a kit of the German amateur radio club in the 80s somewhere, and it was for 20 meters for 14 megahertz, and there I could listen to Morse code, which I wasn't able to decode at that time, but also to single sideband voice communication, and could hear stations all over Europe and I think some further DX contacts. But it was interesting, throw a piece of wire out the window and get your feedback.
I think it would be important for us to clarify too, we keep throwing around bands, 80 meters, 40 meters, 20 meters, 2 meters, so on and so forth. Might be important to mention too that a lot of the different bands are not only known by the frequency allocation, but also their wavelength, and that's what that meter discussion is.
So I wish we would have had a few more, deeper questions. We probably will get some deeper questions after this goes out. I'm sure there will be some. Hopefully there'll be, if there's one person that becomes interested after this goes out on HPR, I'll be very happy. But I imagine there'll be quite a few others.
Well, I think you're right, and that reminds me that we did not answer our second and final question, which is, what happens if you operate without a license? And why should I get a license if I can operate without one? Well, I have some personal experience in this realm. Part of where I became an amateur radio operator is I was building transmitters. Before I knew what amateur radio was, I was building transmitters, and I clobbered a local FM station. It wasn't very high power, but I just happened to be close enough to them that I walked all over their signal, and then I received a nasty gram in the mail, a letter from our fine friends at the FCC telling me I should stop. Brought it into work where I was a bench tech, and they told me all about amateur radio and how I could transmit legally, and so that's how I jumped into it. There are people who do transmit illegally, and by illegally I mean without a license. I think in the United States this concept of free banding is popular, where they modify CB radios and end up transmitting on the amateur bands. I'm not sure about all of the legal repercussions, and you guys might be able to speak to them, but I believe, from what I've seen, mostly people just get fined for operating without a license. And I don't know if you can get a license if you are caught operating without a license. I would have to look at the laws, but I would definitely encourage people to get a license if they are going to transmit, because the fines are often pretty hefty.
In addition to the fines, I think sometimes the FCC has the authority to seize equipment too.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I believe that's true in the United States and other places. And what I tell folks is, if they really want to know why would you want to have a license, if you don't have a license, most ham or amateur radio operators won't communicate with you. So, or if you make up something with the internet, if you give a fictitious call sign, I know within 10 seconds, 20 seconds, with the power of the internet, that you're not who you say you are, or what you're, the fake station identification is not good, and it takes the fun out of it. Once you have the license, you'd be surprised how many people you can talk to and it's well worth it to me. Plus, you know, I'm cheap. I don't want to give the government any money I don't have to.
Let's be fair, in the United States is $15. I think most people can scrape that together. $15 is a lot better. Paying $15 for license is a lot better than however many thousands for a radio fine.
Yeah, I don't know how big the fines or the charges are, but I think it can go up to into a real crime. So, and to have your amateur radio license, it allows you to communicate with other amateur radio operators and not with any other stations. And in German amateur radio law, it's explicitly stated that amateur radio, one of the main purposes of amateur radio is education and experimentation and so on. And to be able to do this, they acknowledge that you have to, for experimentation, you have to be able to build your own transmitters and so on. And this is a privilege which, in my point of view, is underemphasized in most times, that we are the only radio service that is allowed to build their own transmitters and to care for complying with the regulations. But we can do it on our own. We can modify commercial equipment. We can build it completely by ourselves, design it. And no other service is allowed to do so. They all have to use certified equipment, and we are the only ones who can experiment legally on this realm.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought of it that way, but yeah, that the aspect of experimentation is unique in the amateur radio frequencies. And I guess just to clarify on this, I mean, the reason why there's a license necessary at all, I mean, organizations like the FCC in the U.S. and other organizations in other countries, I mean, they're charged with, you know, making sure that the radio frequencies, the radio spectrum, if you will, is, you know, used as it, you know, is used useful for everybody, and there's not, you know, abuse of that. And so, you know, there are a few frequencies that are public frequencies that anybody can use without a license, but they're very limited. There's a limited amount of power that you can transmit and all of that. And then, of course, there's the license spectrum that commercial people use. They pay a lot of money to gain access to the frequencies, and they use it with certified equipment. But then they've carved out these, you know, few frequencies, relatively small ranges of frequencies, but all over the spectrum that are allocated to amateur use. And if you get a license, then you can use those in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I think those are excellent points. One of the major aspects of the hobby is definitely experimentation, and it's nice to have that. The other major aspect of the hobby is community building, which I think will sit well with listeners of Hacker Public Radio. In fact, I think we've got two things there. Experimentation, real big for the community, and community itself and goodwill. And again, as John said, if you are making something up or you're just blathering on the radio, amateurs will tune away from you and not participate. We like to keep our bands friendly, and we like to keep them free of what we call QRM or malicious interference. So anybody that is thinking about utilizing the amateur bands without a license, I would just strongly encourage you to study a little bit, and in the process of studying, you'll definitely learn a lot and go the legal route for sure. Okay, guys, I have gone through that thread and I don't see any other questions, so I guess at this point we'll go ahead and wrap it up. If any of you have any closing remarks, please go ahead. The only thing I want to say is I'm pleased that so many people showed up, 5, and we're all licensed. That's awesome. I didn't know there were any hams that were listening to Hacker Public Radio, so this is great. So thanks for showing up. And I would also ask the community, if you have any questions, shoot us a message on the mailing list, or you can contact me directly. You can find my contact information on any of my posts on the mailing list. Ask us your questions. If we missed something, let us know. If you want to know about a particular mode of operation, or you want to know more about radio theory, or whatever, just reach out.
Or if you want to contribute with special knowledge, if there's some mode you like to do, you're good at, or you have special knowledge about, join in and share it.
Yeah, I echo all of those sentiments. I guess just as in terms of wrapping things up, I mean, the two pieces of advice that I think I would offer to anybody that's thinking about getting an amateur radio license, and these have already been said, I'm just going to restate them. One, you know, go ahead and do it. I mean, you don't have to get it all figured out first. Just go ahead and find some people to help you, find a testing session, and dive in. And then the other thing is, you know, find a club or find, you know, somebody that's licensed and learn from them, and you'll get it all figured out in pretty short order.
And I have a few, a couple things. Since you listen to Hacker Public Radio, you know about podcasts. Listen, just in your podcatcher, if it has a search feature, search for amateur radio. There's some real good ones. There's one that is a gentleman that has participated in put out some shows, K5TUX. He does a podcast called Linux in the Ham Shack. It has Linux, ham radio, amateur radio, excellent podcast. Search for those. If you already listen to podcasts, listen to a few more. There are some on the Twit network that can be good. At times, it's both video. It's video and it's good. Yep, definitely post something in the Hacker Public Radio. You know, in the email stuff. I'm reachable. By my call sign, if you look up my call sign and you send, you take the time to figure out how to do that, if you Google my call sign, KT4KB, you'll find a way to reach me. I'll be glad to answer anything that I know of, and technical or untechnical, fun or not fun, and even some funny stories about getting knocked across the room a few times.
I'm glad you brought up the podcasts. Yeah, I listened to Linux and the Ham Shack as well. It's a great podcast, and I'll plug one other that I have been listening to for about a year now, and that's Ham Radio 360. You just Google for Ham Radio 360. It's an excellent podcast, especially for beginners, but even seasoned folks as well. I'm not associated with it at all, but I just want to make that plug.
Okay, so thank you a lot for participating, all of you. And I think there are many, many more hams in the community, and they can participate here also. Shall we try to find a more Europe friendly date for the next session?
I am definitely on board with that. I feel bad that Ken couldn't join us tonight, and since he is not here and you guys brought up podcasts, I will do Ken's job for us right now. If you've ever thought about making a podcast, if you've ever thought about recording anything, and you're listening to Hacker Public Radio, this is the place to do it. Go listen to my podcasts or my episodes and listen to the horrible quality with which I produce them. I assure you can do better with a tin can and some string. Go out, find a topic, record something for us, submit it. It's super easy. we're a community that exists on podcasts created by our listeners, and we sure could use your podcasts as well. Thanks.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.